This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And I'm Orion Samuelson saying good morning to you as we come together with a Saturday morning show, something that's been going on for decades here at WGN, and we always appreciate your being with us as we travel the country, and particularly the heart of the corn soybean belt throughout the year, but especially now at harvest time, getting a look at what's going on with early harvest. So we'll be with you until 6 o'clock. Max Armstrong will be checking in a couple of times this morning. He'll be talking markets with Paul Giorgi at Allendale, based in McHenry. And he'll also be checking in from some of his travels this week, visiting with farmers, and I'll be doing the same on some of our travels this week. But this morning, it's coming your way, thanks to the magic of radio and technology from our studio in Scottsdale, Arizona. 69 degrees at the moment in the desert, and a perfectly clear sky with that full harvest moon hanging out there tonight. So hope you can stay with us for the next hour. And Jim Fazell standing by with some gardening tips. We'll be joining Jim when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
We are halfway through the month of September, and it's moving faster and faster. Autumn is arriving, and crops are ready to harvest. So it's time again to talk about garden crops with Jim Fazell, our man who deals with horticulture here on the Saturday Morning Show. Good morning, sir.
Well, good morning, Orion. It's a wonderful time of year. The end of summer, as you said, fall begins. I think next Thursday is when it starts.
Right.
But the weather has cooled down. It's expected to be mild this week, and it's a good time and good weather to go out and do a lot of stuff outdoors. I think the average high is down to something in the middle 70s. So it's a perfect time of year, one of my favorite times. We talked about dividing and replanting the perennials a couple of weeks ago, or I think it was a couple of weeks ago. Time flies. I never know what day it
was.
Anyway, we did not get the spring flowering bulbs, and I know we had a caller that wanted us to talk about that, and we intentionally left out some kinds of perennials. First of all, some of them have wonderful seeds on them for birds. Now, we have some out in our yard that are absolutely perfect for goldfinches, and we have herds of goldfinches out there. I've never had so many. I don't know if they're going through or whether they're going to stay around for a while, but anyway, they're picking the seeds out of these, and it's really fun to go out and sit out in the backyard and watch them working away. But there are a lot of things like grassy plants and the grasses, the perennial grasses, twiggy plants, some of the things like coneflowers, which we're leaving up anyway, need to be divided in the spring, so we'll talk about them then. We don't do that now. But something you need to do, if you're planning on dividing them or moving them, you need to mark them so you know what you have and where it is. And it's probably not a bad idea after you do that to make a map so that you know that this is the coneflower that you want to move or divide, because when you start to do that in the spring, there aren't going to be any leaves on them, and it's going to be pretty hard to tell what they are. But if you plan ahead, that can be done very nicely. Now, we need to talk about spring flowering bulbs. You need to plant them as soon as you can get them, as soon as the bulbs appear in the stores, because that's an excellent selection at that time. And people do pick them over because they know enough to get in and get the better ones. You need to select the biggest bulbs for each type. They need to be firm and disease-free. They need to be clean, no soft spots, no mold. Sometimes we see them in the stores where they've been allowed to get a little bit damp, especially with the kind of weather we've had with the high humidity in the last few weeks. If they've got any green mold or blue mold or white mold on them, pass those up and find something else. Now, the arrangement, once you get the bulbs out in the yard where you're going to plant them, I like to plant them in masses, not in rows. It irritates me. I guess it shouldn't, but if you see a front walk with a row of red tulips up on one side and down the other side like wooden soldiers, maybe some people like that, but I prefer to have them in kind of a bed, an arrangement of a mass of some kind. And I like to mix the kinds and the colors, more or less a naturalistic planting, particularly if you have enough room to do that under shrub beds and so forth where you do have room. or you don't want to mow anyhow. The location, it should be good exposure. It should have pretty well full sun. Now, a lot of the time when these bloom, the trees aren't out yet, or at least they're out partially. So exposure so that you get good sun at that time of year isn't too hard to achieve, but you should. Also, you need to plant them where there's going to be good drainage. They will not tolerate standing water around them that will rot those bulbs off even in the wintertime. Now, once you've selected where you're going to do that, if you're going to put them in beds, you need to dig the whole area over to a depth of about 6 inches or so, working the soil up and adding organic matter or fertilizer if you can. Not essential, but it doesn't hurt any. Scatter the bulbs out where they're to be planted. This would be in kind of a random order. If you have two of them that are too close together, of course, you can spread that out, but don't plant them in rows. I had a friend who was an engineer, and he was a wonderful gardener. His wife gave him all kinds of instructions on you plant this out in that part of the yard and so forth. He would go out and do it, but he planted everything geometrically in rows, almost took a letter, almost took a ruler out and measured them so they had them right straight across. You don't want to do that. Make it a lot more natural. Scatter them where they'd be planted. Plant each bulb individually. You can dig a hole with a trowel or by hand if you've worked the soil up well enough. Set the bulbs to a depth of 3 to 4 times the size of a bulb. If it's a 1-inch bulb, set it 3 or 4 inches deep. The smaller ones can be higher. Now, you really need to plant them with the pointed end up, and you can tell that when you're looking at them. That's where they're going to grow from. But if you happen to get one upside down, they have enough sense to grow around and back up again. It's just going to take them longer to do it. Cover with soil and firm them and soak them in real well. That needs to firm the soil around them and to make sure that they go through the winter with moisture. Now, what's going to happen once you get them soaked in is that they're going to begin making roots. You want to have enough moisture that the bulbs can grow and make roots. The better root system you have when they decide to flower in spring, the more flowers you're going to have. In the wintertime, do water them if we have a dry spell in the middle of winter, and oftentimes we'll have that time when all the snow melts and things begin to dry out for a week or so, maybe at the beginning of February. Sometimes we call it a January thaw. But you need to be sure that they don't dry out. Mulch, always a question. You really don't need to mulch these plants. In fact, I prefer not to because that gives mice a place to hide. Mice, for some peculiar reason, have an ability to smell these things out, and they'll dig down and eat them for you if you don't keep them out of there. And one of the things you might need to do, too, if you have a little bit of digging going on, squirrels will dig as well as mice will. Cover the bed over with chicken wire or hardware cloth. Now, it won't hurt the plants any. They can actually begin to come up under that, but as soon as they begin to come up in the spring, you need to remove that stuff and let them go ahead and grow. Now, there's always a question about what should I do if these things begin to grow before winter starts or during winter when it thaws? Don't worry about it. These leaves are perfectly able to stand the cold. They may freeze up. They may turn brown on the tips, but the bulbs underneath them are going to continue to make more leaves as the season goes along in the spring. They'll flower fine. Don't worry about it. It's not going to hurt a thing. We were going to talk about geraniums, and we'll do that another day. But that's about enough for now. I think it's a good week to go out and do things. We need to enjoy this tremendously good fall weather that we have in this part of the country and just appreciate what we have.
Well, I want to talk to you about what you're going to do later this week because you're going back to my home country, the Kickapoo of western Wisconsin.
Yeah, there's some kind of a magnet that draws us up there. You know, it's such a beautiful part of the world. And
it is.
Jane's stepmom has lived up there for years. She's farmed at Gay's Mills. Well, she finally had to sell the farm, and she's moved to a nursing home. And she's in Viroqua, which you know quite well. It's just down the street from where you grew up in Westby. And we'll go up and see her, and we'll even probably think about taking her up to Westby to Morgan, maybe.
Yeah.
Morgan for...
the old town inn. Borgen, I tell you what, I'm a part owner of Borgen simply because I didn't want to see that restaurant go away, and I just have a minimal investment in it to try to keep it on Main Street in Westby. But at the old town inn, my niece is the chef. So either place, you're going to get good food.
Well, maybe we'll need to go twice. But anyway, we'll have a good time up there, and we'll stop at Gay's Mills and get apples, wonderful apple country. Haven't talked to our friend Herb Teichman over in Michigan. I assume from his emails or from his website that the crop is good over there. But we'll talk to him before we talk about apples and find out just exactly what's going on.
Well, you have a good trip. Have a safe trip on those country roads, and we'll talk to you next week.
Look forward to it, Orion.
Jim Fizell, our person who knows everything there is to know about horticulture here on the Saturday Morning Show.
24 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show. And, of course, as you know, Max and I do a lot of traveling around the area. And at harvest time, we do like to get out into the field and take a look at what's happening. I was in Davenport, Iowa on Monday evening to speak at the Scott County Farm Bureau meeting. And a good morning to those good folks, a lot of them who listen to us here on the Saturday Morning Show and throughout the day on WGN. And saw one combine working in a cornfield just west of the Mississippi River. But as we travel, harvest time is here. So let's say good morning to Max Armstrong.
Well, good morning, Orion. We've talked with quite a few growers this week who are ready for harvest, and some who've already been in the fields. And we've also visited with folks in the farm equipment business and with grain elevator operators. Hey, those folks at the grain elevators are looking at the daunting challenge ahead of them to handle crops that are this big this year. I was on the program a couple of nights ago at the little town of Gifford, Illinois. The Gifford State Bank held its annual meeting there. They invited myself and agriculture meteorologist Greg Solier, and I moderated the program that included Amy Sage from the Andersons, the big elevator near Champaign, and Roger Miller with Premier Cooperative. They have, we were right across the street from one of their elevators there at Gifford. And these folks are looking at what's coming at them. Now, let there be no mistake about it. They make money at these elevators from the volume of handling big crops. It's a far, far better scenario than some have endured when their growers have had very little crop to market. Now, that said, there are many questions about how the truckloads of corn and soybeans will be handled and where the grain will be stored and how it will be moved. On that program for the Gifford State Bank, I was told that the availability of rail cars should be good. They've been assured that they ought to be able to move that grain out without any problem. The elevator representatives that were with me told me that their bins are empty. They're awaiting all of the grain that will come their way. Just what happens with harvest time weather, of course, will be a major consideration. You know, last year there was almost a month of rain-free harvest weather in that area around Champaign, Illinois. The elevators struggled to keep up with the growers during that rapid harvest. Now, on the other hand, if rains do come frequently, as some of the forecasters, such as our friend agriculture meteorologist Greg Solier, have been saying, there could be delays that would give elevators the opportunity to keep up, but that continued moisture could exacerbate the problems they've already seen with grain quality. Some parts of western and southern Illinois, as we heard this week, have already been described as trouble spots for grain quality, where the disease problems are going to erode the already insufficient price for the crop, because growers will be taking a dock at the elevator. On the other hand, we heard something interesting this week from Bryce Knorr with Farm Futures as he talked about storage of the crop.
Even though storage is going to be tight, most farmers are going to have space available for their crops. The key is not to just put that grain in the bin and plan on sitting on it until spring or summer. Take a look at your bottom line. You may be surprised if you've done some hedging during the summer on the rally. You may have a profitable price locked in because your cost of production is going to be lower due to good yields. So first and foremost, before you decide on your marketing strategy, figure out what your profit objective is, and you may come pretty close to a profit already.
Bryce Knorr with Farm Futures, and of course, as we saw earlier this summer, Orion, in that June rally, that surprising rally that took place, pricing opportunities can come when you least expect it. And growers need to be mindful of that as they get tied up in the harvest, and they're all busy here to be watching for any kind of an opportunity that could come along where they can perhaps find a way to break even on these large crops. That's our report this morning. It's great to join you on the Saturday Morning Show. Thank you, Orion.
Well, thank you, Max, and we'll wait a few minutes for your market visit this morning with Paul Georgie, president of Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois, who'll be on with us in the second half of the hour here on WGN Radio. The activity today at the Chicagoland Speedway group of farmers will be there with a display and a tent and an exhibit area where you can talk agriculture. While you're waiting for the NASCAR race to get underway, Farmers and Ranchers Alliance and Winfield and Wendt all joining together to provide dialogue to help all of you learn a little bit more of what it means at harvest time when we're talking about a record crop, a year that sees more corn and soybeans being produced in the United States than ever before in our history. But as several of you have reminded me with your emails, it's not a crop till it's in the bin. And yes, indeed, that's true. The September crop report that came out Monday of this week said, yes, we will produce more than 15 billion bushels of corn, more than 4 billion bushels of soybeans, something we've never, ever done before in the history of the United States. But we do have to get it out of the field and into the export market and the domestic market before we can really call it a crop. But right now, it's a big one, and let's hope that weather cooperates enough so that we can get most of it harvested. Thank you very much, Roger. And this week and next week and one more week, I'll be checking in every Saturday morning from Scottsdale, Arizona, in the Valley of the Sun and the desert and all that sort of thing. And a little bit later this morning, I'll talk about one of our annual events here in Arizona, the Yavapai County Ranch Horse Club Calf Sale and the Beef Barbecue. That's coming up a week from today, and we'll be in Peoples Valley, Arizona. That's about 100 miles northwest of the Phoenix Scottsdale area. But right now, welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson, this morning talking about being safe on the farm. It's National Farm Safety and Health Week starting tomorrow. But first, I am always delighted to be on the air for Wink Products Company, one of those Midwest small town success stories, because Wink is a family-owned corporation in rural Eldora, Iowa. And in that community has manufactured specialty cleaning products since 1947. And today, Wink is a nationally recognized brand, and it's because Wink products work. Wink manufactures professional strength, household cleaners, and drain openers. Learn about all of the Wink products at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. For the past couple of decades now, twice a year, I have delivered my farm safety sermon on Samuelson Says. I'm going to do that now, but it will not be my words because a few days ago I read the best opinion editorial dealing with farm safety I have ever read, written by my friend Mike Deering, who is Executive Vice President of the Missouri Cattlemen's Association and a family farmer from Montgomery City, Missouri. So these are his words and just excerpts. I don't have time for it all, but these are Mike's words, not mine. The headline, Your Funeral. When thinking about that moment when you ride off into the sunset, you probably imagine yourself being in your 80s or even 90s. Your body, though, is worn out. Your skin, thick, textured like leather, etched by windburn and sun from decades of working on the farm. You picture yourself peacefully drifting off. You're ready for the next journey. But what you don't imagine is dying young, watching from above as your rambunctious 11-year-old son screams, desperately calling out for his dad, his enthusiasm for life obliterated, your wife feeling guilty that she is the one still breathing. She feels helpless with nothing but uncertainty ahead. You don't think about this, but you should. Mike goes on to say, this was my life in 1993 when my dad drew his last breath under a John Deere tractor. A horrible, tragic scene that haunts me to this day. I remember the sound of sparrows, the smell of April rain,
and the undeniable feeling of emptiness, a vivid memory that won't leave me alone even with 20 years gone by. Time does not ease your pain. That's a statement that anyone who has truly felt loss knows is flowery, feel-good nonsense. And he concluded by saying, I want no one to feel what I felt, to see what I saw, or to hear what I heard more than 20 years ago. Farm safety sermons don't come any better than that written by Mike Deering. I share his thoughts on Samuelson Says.
A presentation of Tribune Radio Network. And Max Armstrong standing by with Paul Giorgi to talk markets when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
At our studio this weekend, Paul Giorgi, Allendale Incorporated, with the harvest underway. Well, some places they're waiting to roll into the field. Paul, what are you hearing? Some of these anecdotal reports that are coming in, both from big yield territory and areas where we know the yields aren't so good. I was in western Tennessee this week. I guess that's why I'm asking. Highly variable there, nowhere near the kind of yields they've had the past couple of years, but they tend to be the exception, I suppose, this year.
Well, I think that certain areas have got problems, and we're starting to hear more of it. Other areas are doing very, very well. I would say southern part of the Midwest, southern part of the Corn Belt, where the heavy rains just kept coming all summer long. They got a beautiful-looking crop out there, but when the harvest actually takes place, we're finding a lot of problems, a lot of diseases. One of my customers said he's never seen it so bad, and he thinks there's every disease in his field that he can think of. So that we're hearing in Indiana, southern Illinois. And then when you get to Iowa, western Illinois, and out in Nebraska, yields are coming in very, very good. Missouri yields are coming in good because they got it planted early. They did get rain, and now they're getting it harvested at a good time. So we're hearing 240, 265 bushel acre yields in Iowa that normally have an APH of like 225. But the thing that I am concerned about, and don't know if what's factual or not, these crops look so good. Now, yields are coming in less than what producers thought in the southern Midwest. Is that off of what they thought was going to be here or actually off of their APH? I haven't got verification on that.
There was a lot of talk, of course, in the month of August about what the heat was doing to trim back the corn yields. And then if we looked at the September crop report from USDA, the conclusion was, well, it might have done something, but it didn't appear to do much, at least according to the USDA crop report. Are we still thinking, are there a lot of folks still of the belief, especially some of those crop scouts who were out in the fields, that is yet to show up in diminished corn yields?
Well, I think, first of all, the September crop report, you look at that, and the USDA had the crop conditions report on a weekly basis that was well above average, well above and record conditions on a weekly basis. So that was very difficult for them to lower the September yield. This October report, we're actually going to get actual harvested yields. I think we're going to see some lower yields as we go along. But I think a fact that we have to realize is that we're going to see some total production that could even be a record production and probably more than 15 billion when it's all said and done, simply because we got more acres that are going to produce good yields. Nebraska is an example of that. Nebraska producers are harvesting silage. He thinks his yield is down a little bit, but he's going to have a lot more corn because the ends of the fields, the corners that are dry land that didn't get irrigated, they're going to produce just as much as the irrigated. So, and we also got acreage adjustments coming up in October that could and probably will show more corn acres and more soybean acres. So the crop could get bigger, not necessarily by yield in the corn.
You mentioned the weekly crop bulletins and the way that corn crop stayed so good all through the growing season. This week we started to see a little bit of a diminishing in that rating, did we not, in terms of the corn condition rating?
Well, we've seen a slight reduction in it, but we're at a time period where we should see that. The crop doesn't look as good. It's drying up. It's maturing. So we should see a quicker decline, actually, than we have seen. So that's going to be, the crop conditions report is really a beauty contest. And, the harvest is going to tell us what's really out there.
In terms of how we get rid of this crop, the demand, there's nothing new there, is there? I mean, we're still looking at a pretty tough scenario in terms of moving these large supplies.
Well, demand is a big issue, and we've got a whole marketing year to work through that. I think the first thing the farmer's going to have to deal with is finding storage for this crop. And then if we have disease issues, we could have quality issues that are going to be a problem, a headache for the farmer. Can this crop be stored as long as a farmer would like to keep it? So those are some questions that will have to be answered down the road. But demand is a real struggle right now. We've got a tremendous supply of food around the world, like wheat, soybeans, corn in other countries. And just today or this week, we've got the Black Sea wheat, $7 a ton cheaper than U.S. corn. So it makes it very difficult to continue to have demand. We're going to be watching the value of the U.S. dollar compared to currencies in other countries, because that makes a big difference for the buyer when he comes in and has to buy U.S. Corn, even though it's cheap and the dollar is strong. He still doesn't get as much product.
When you're talking about that wheat out of the Black Sea region, you're talking about it being so cheap that it could be substituted as a feed ingredient for the corn that might ordinarily be in that feed?
Absolutely. The wheat has got a higher protein than corn, so it's going to take away from corn usage and meal usage in livestock rations. And if you're a world buyer, I can buy wheat, get some protein, get the some energy with it, not have to buy corn. So if you're comparing the two, the wheat would be the better buy.
What are you telling your grower customers about the basis and watching this cash market situation? And I guess I ask you that in light of what you were talking about earlier with some of these quality problems, could they get bad enough that it might affect the basis in some areas, that there might need to be corn brought in, that farmers really watching the basis closely might be able to respond to that quickly and take advantage of a price bump locally?
Well, I think that's going to have to be watched very closely. The poor quality grain usually is not bullish on a historical basis, and that means it has to be moved. So when you have to are forced to move grain, you lose the upper hand in marketing. So that could continue to press prices as we go through harvest here. There won't be any need to blend anything. So the elevators will look for this disease issues, and if it's aflatoxin or whatever it might be, that'll be watched very closely, and they'll probably provide some discounts for that. Basis is also going to be a problem. We've got some customers up in Minnesota. They want to deliver old crop corn to their elevator. The elevator says, "I can't take it. I can't take it because it's full of other farmers' corn that they've got stored at the elevator." So if you're not and haven't been thinking about marketing your grain and what you're going to do with it at harvest time, that is something you need to do. If you have to, you might be better off selling it than storing it outside and just market it, use futures or options to re-own.
Thanks for being with us, Paul. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Paul Georgie, Allendale Incorporated.
We are coming up to 6 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show. And as we always like to discuss, many outdoor activities still on the calendar for the fall season. Gloria and I do get involved in quite a few charity events, one that we'll not be able to attend tomorrow, but I do want to mention it because of our very good friend, Pat Rodbro, who is part of what's called NAMI, CCNS, dealing with families who have members with mental illness challenges. And that organization, the NAMI CCNS Walk Run, is being held tomorrow, September 18th. It'll begin at the Washington Elementary School in Park Ridge. Registration begins at 7 a.m. The run starts at 8 and the walk at 8:15. Everyone welcome. Bring your family. There will be music, ponies, and fun. And the donations are used for advocacy, education, and support for those with mental illness and their loved ones. So that's tomorrow at Washington Elementary School in Park Ridge, if you want to support that activity. And I've been involved with them for quite a few years, and they do great work for people challenged with family members with mental illness. So that's an event for you to enjoy. Another event, because we're coming into one of the prettiest times of the year. That's the fall season. And I noticed flying Air Orion out to Davenport, Iowa, on the banks of the Mississippi this week. Color change is happening in the fields rapidly, and my big clump maple in the backyard in Sun City, Huntley, beginning to turn red, and it does that every year with a brilliant red. But in June, you know, we have the June Dairy Month breakfast on the farm. Well, in McHenry County, they have come up with a program that I don't know how many years they've been doing it, but it's the McHenry County Farm Stroll and Market. And that's coming up a week from tomorrow, Sunday, September 25, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. And here's the deal. Farm Stroll is a self-guided tour of McHenry County's diversified family farms. No beginning or end of the tour. Just choose the farms you wish to visit and go during the time frame that we mentioned, the 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. a week from tomorrow. No charge for Farm Stroll, but they do suggest you bring some cash because individual farmers will be selling products and produce. And you can, well, they also offer information that toilets will be available at select farms. Look for the designation within the descriptions of their booklet and press release. Some farms will conduct tours and demonstrations, but hear this, for your safety, follow the farmer's instructions and be respectful of the animals. These are working farms. So have control over small children at all times. Wash your hands after exposure to livestock. Wear sturdy shoes. And hear this one. Don't bring pets. Do not bring pets on the McHenry County Farm Stroll and Market. You can get all the information on the farms that are involved in this program on just Google McHenry County Farm Bureau in Illinois, and you'll find all of the farms listed. So that's coming up a week from tomorrow. Now, as we wind down the program, we look back at this week on markets and how we ended yesterday in the marketplace at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Finally, we ended a day with everything higher. The October lean hog contract gained 27 cents yesterday to end at $55.47 a hundredweight. The October live cattle contract gained 85 cents yesterday, ending at $107.87. And the September feeder cattle contract gained $1.27 and ended the day and the week at $135.50 a hundredweight. As I mentioned, a week from today, I'll be in Peoples Valley, Arizona, joining Arizona cattlemen at an event that started nearly 90 years ago. I call it a one-day county fair that focuses on the cattle industry. And over the years that I've been involved in this activity, quite a few of you from in the Midwest that head for Arizona maybe early for the snowbird season, but are going to be in the state. A lot of people from the Midwest have come to this event. So it's Peoples Valley, about 100 miles northwest of Scottsdale, Phoenix. And we'll be there next Saturday, 1 week from today. And if you're from the Midwest or listening on stream, come on up and say hello. Grain market ended with a green screen yesterday, despite that September crop report that says we're harvesting record crops. The December corn contract will start trading Monday at $3.37 a bushel after gaining 6.25 cents yesterday. And November soybeans will start the week at $9.66 a bushel, a good gain in the marketplace yesterday, up 15¾ cents. So a lot going on. Farmers market still open, and now about everything they're selling except, well, coffee. Or products like that that we have to import. But all of the crops are at maturity now, and so you're buying locally when you go out to a farmer's market. A lot of communities have great farmer's markets, and take the time to go to your farmer's market and enjoy the freshest food you can get, because they pick it in the morning and bring it to those farmer's markets activities. Well, we're out of time. Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson, appreciating your company here every Saturday morning on the Saturday Morning Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN and WGN.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on the Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.